Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Jeff. How's it going?
Eliana Douglas, I'm holding up.
Yeah, we don't have any opening theme music today, but
I know. I think the Nordic Equation. Oh, there it is. Do you hear it?
A little sparhusen.
I feel like thematically consistent with the song. It kind of sounds like it's coming from Iceland or something.
I just got a tweet from Finland. I've never been to Finland. I've been to the other Nordic countries, Scandinavian countries.
Were you filming in the other Nordic countries or just visiting?
Well, this was this strange thing because I did Easy to Assemble, which was all about Sweden, even though we shot it here. And of course, the way my life is, I got this call to go work in Sweden on a comedy show through a woman. I'd asked her to say, I emailed a woman in Sweden, casting director, can you tell me if you have any Swedish actors in California? And so we developed a friendship, and I said, hey, if a show ever comes up, I'd love to go to Sweden. And then that's exactly what happened. I went and we filmed there with Lena Olin. God, she's incredible. And Greg Poehler. Called Welcome to Sweden.
I remember that show.
Yeah, we did two seasons of it. It was really wonderful. It's funny, we were, I'm not sure where we first were. I think we moved to NBC, and then once we moved to NBC, they canceled us, which was really too bad. So I'm mainly mad that I didn't get a chance to go back to Sweden.
Those Polars are talented.
Yes. So before we're going to take questions today, and I hope people are, I know some people I had written down from last week, and you had questions too from last week, but should we do another shout out to people just so they know I'm answering questions? I put up a little teaser too. I put this photo from Goodfellas up of my a continuity shot.
For all you guys on Twitter, we see you and we appreciate you. Just know that we won't have time to get to every question, but you can always follow Iliana at Iliana Rama. You guys are really fun. I love your following because they're just like us. They're just like all these kind-hearted, earnest film nerds, and they kind of congregate to your Twitter. So it's a safe place.
I wanted to ask you, I have some recommendations while we're quarantined, but I wanted to ask you, you said you've been super busy. You're working with Maria Menounos now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. We've both had, for as strange as this time is, we're both having professionally good weeks, which is nice. Yeah. I've been working, you know, Maria Menounos is the EP of the network Popcorn Talk, a big fan of Iliana as well, along with her husband, Kevin Undergaro. She has a daytime show called Better Together. It's a podcast and we film out of their house. And I've been producing it, which has been great. It's just been a lot of new responsibilities that I'm kind of figuring out how to navigate.
It's kind of fun. I mean, but you know, it's with the new quarantine, do you set the bar very high for yourself or very low? Is it less stressful or more stressful?
I think in general, and Ryan and you might disagree, but I try to set the bar high. I think I've kind of got that that's sort of like self-hating Midwestern thing that like, I'll always try my hardest, but never feel like I'm quite satisfied. I feel like every region has their own version of workaholism. And I feel like in the Midwest, it's sort of like I need you to like me, so I'm going to work really hard. And so I feel like that's my version of, I guess that's good though.
That's a good quality. I had something that I was very nervous about. I was, you know, before all this started, I was supposed to have a very major pitch on a project that I wrote. Of course, it was postponed. I said, well, that's it. No one's going to be listening to pitches. But no, they wanted to do it virtually. And so I did it yesterday. And I was so nervous about this thing leading up to it. But it weirdly went much better, I think, in the end than had I been in the room. And I'm not sure if that's because their expectations were low, but I went into it, you know, I practiced for 2 days just because this was going to be a whole new animal. How do you pitch a very animated kind of a thing when you've got like a little box like this? But I was here in my little office dancing around. I had my keyboard here doing sound effects. And I don't know if because their expectations were very low, but I went into it, you know, I had like quarantine jokes beforehand. I mean, it was kind of unbelievable. So we were on the phone for what I thought was going to be a 10, 15 minute pitch. We were on the phone for an hour. Wow. And they kept me going. And when it was over, I just collapsed, of course. But, you know, that was one of the craziest things I think I've ever had to do.
I think when we look at some of the good that's going to come out of this, there are some appealing things about Zoom and virtual conferencing. I mean, Maria talks about, she's like, I don't want to ever have to drive to Santa Monica again. Like, if I can take a Zoom meeting.
I agree. That's what I felt like getting ready for this meeting, which was, you know, at 4 o'clock. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I didn't have to park. I had my tea already. I was sitting here. I'm in my little space. I mean, like I said, the only thing that was going to be awkward was that, yes, I was going to have to perform in a very animated way. And there were just going to be, you know, the Brady Bunch little heads kind of looking at me. But again, in a way, a couple of the people had, you know, I couldn't even really see their faces. So I was thinking later, maybe this is actually better, because if I'd been in someone's office and they'd come in with a phone call or interrupted me, or if I'd looked someone in the face and thought, he doesn't think this is funny at all, you know, maybe I would have been really distracted. So I'm so curious, you know, what this will be in the future. I don't know. Or do we just go right back to where we were in entertainment? You know,
I mean, the other thing I'll say is, like, I don't know if you've done any like social Zoom hangouts, but it's not as good as the real thing, but it's not bad. Like,
I haven't.
We did a murder mystery party over Zoom, my wife and I, with some friends last weekend.
God, that is so nerdy. Okay.
That's who you're dealing with, Ileana. I'm a murder mystery on Zoom kind of guy. Welcome to my office. But it was surprisingly fun. Like, it's not as good as the real thing, but yes. I don't know if you can see people, and it's better than nothing.
There's definitely an intimacy, like, over the people that I was going to do with the pitch with, you know, it was really funny. Like, we, in the morning we got together, we did sort of a pre-pitch, you know, over our coffee. And of course we look terrible. And he's like, well, I guess I have to shave. I haven't shaved in 3 weeks, you know. See it for our virtual meeting.
Yeah,
but, love it. I think maybe the low expectations of it, if you can, you know, adapt to it. I've said this last week, I think Jimmy Fallon, out of all the talk shows, is just doing a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. I will almost be disappointed to see him go back to the regular show, because I've so enjoyed watching him, because it's so intimate and truthful.
And human.
Interesting, you know.
I couldn't agree more.
So a couple of recommends before we get to questions, just if people are looking for, you know, stuff to do aside from watching movies. I want to recommend, this is my all-time favorite showbiz biography. It's Marlene Dietrich, and it's written by her daughter, Maria Riva. Now look at this. This is quite a book. It's the best. It's my favorite celebrity autobiography, and I don't know why it's never been made into a miniseries. I know it would take quite a lot, but Marlene Dietrich, for me, is one of the most fascinating movie stars you know, she kind of created this persona, obviously influenced people like Lady Gaga, Madonna, all sorts of people. You know, worked in World War II, left her career, just an incredibly fascinating person, and then came back and you know, started a new stage persona as a Las Vegas, you know, singer, and went to Carnegie Hall, worked with Burt Bacharach. Mm. She had many, many affairs, male and female, and they're all documented in this book. So I want to recommend that book. This is a great book on directing. It's called Directing the Film, Eric Sherman, and this was done for AFI. Eric Sherman is the son of a director named Vincent Sherman. This is interviews with directors. This has been like a Bible for me. There's so much valuable information if you want to learn about directing. This is, if you're like me, like you were talking about your film nerd thing, I love to visit locations where movies are shot. This book, I can't hold it up. All the pages are going to fall out. I've used it so many times. But whenever I've shot in the Bay Area, it's called Footsteps in the Fog. And it's Alfred Hitchcock, San Francisco. And it has all the locations of all the Hitchcock movies, like The Birds. And you can go there and you can be like me. You can recreate certain things. And that and it's got pictures. It's really great. And my last book, I'm into true crime. Did you know that about me?
No, but I'm not shocked.
Yeah, I always had a fascination with, you know, crime and old crime. And not as much new stuff, because it's sort of... I like the stuff from the 30s and 40s. Anyway, if you're into true crime and Hollywood, this book is called For the People, Inside the Los Angeles County DA's Office from 1850 to 2000.
Wow.
Now, again, this is just an incredible book. I mean, Bugsy Siegel. So it covers a lot of the most famous murders that happened in Los Angeles.
Natalie Wood, presumably.
Yes. Everything that happened in the up to 2000, they should have made it, I guess, another book after that. But it starts in 1850.
So, wow.
Yeah. So it's got from the very, very beginnings, all sorts of really interesting crimes in here. Would be a great podcast if I had. If there were three of me, this is one of the things I would be doing. Mm-hmm. I do a podcast on cases out of the DA, because the DA's office in the 30s was not really on the up and up. Anyway, those are my book recommends. And let's get to some questions.
Totally. Well, I want to start. And you know what? I made the mistake of not having credits on these. So I'll read the question and then come back and let you know who wrote it. But
okay, sure.
I didn't realize that you were in a stage production of The Music Man in the 2000s with Jeff Goldblum and Ned Begley. One of your fans had the pleasure of seeing you, said, I had the pleasure of getting to see you perform in a production of The Music Man in Pittsburgh along with Jeff Goldblum and Ned Begley Jr. Any fun anecdotes?
Well, the whole movie was a fun anecdote because Jeff Goldblum was going back to Pittsburgh he wanted to do a kind of a mockumentary about his life. And he was going to go do The Music Man. And he said, wouldn't it be fun if you were in it and Ed Begley was in it? So the people in Pittsburgh said to Jeff Goldblum, because originally they didn't want him in the show. They made him audition for it. And he still didn't get it. But they said, well, if you can bring a couple of your famous friends and have them be in it, then we'll do it. So he got me and Ed Begley. He also got Bruno Kirby, bless his heart, but Bruno Kirby passed away. So it was me and Ed, and we went to Pittsburgh. And so because we were doing this thing, we decided to also do a mockumentary around it. And I was friends with Moby at the time. We've had Moby
on the show. Right.
And I asked Moby to be in it. So we all had to create kind of fictional reasons as to why we were in Pittsburgh. And so if people want to watch that show with Moby, he talks a little bit about how I got him into Pittsburgh. But so we went and we did the Music Man, and it was one of the great experiences of my life doing that show. I'll tell you one funny anecdote. We went, while we were there, as part of the filming of this thing, we were doing, the people in the show thought we were making fun of them, which we weren't at all. Like, but you know how rumors get started. They thought that we were doing a mockumentary about how retarded people who do musical theater are and how lame it is. And I was thinking, like, what a weird rumor to start, you know, like we're anti musical theater. But it was a complete blast. My other anecdote is that Ed Begley routinely would forget to come on. He's so busy. He's like the busiest man in show business. So he would oftentimes be off stage, you know, working on his little computer or something. And he had this grand, I played the mayor, he's Mayor Shin, and I play his wife. And Ed, one night, he forgot to come on. And we were all doing like really bad ham acting, like, I wonder what's taking the mayor so long, you know. And cut to Ed realizing it. And of course, you know, here we are all real professional, but Ed Begley comes on as if he's, you know, in high school, like, you know, it was the worst kind of acting you ever saw. But for those people who saw the show, my God, was it a special experience. It was really great. Getting to have that experience with Jeff Goldblum, who I adore, was probably one of the highlights, I would say, of my entire career. Really. It was so much fun to do summer theater and to work in Pittsburgh and do a genuine bus and truck show. So thanks for asking.
Anything about Jeff Goldblum that we wouldn't know?
Well, I would say, I mean, he's great, he's doing the show. But I would say that that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, I think some people know that he plays music, but I don't know if people know that he's a wonderful dancer. Mm. So he's a great, he's a very, very good dancer.
Well, if you want to see Jeff Goldblum play music and you're in the LA area, he plays at the Rockwell Table and Stage saxophone every like once a month. He'll play in Echo Park. I've been to that once before. It was like my first weekend in LA. So make sure you check that out. Yeah. And that question came from Lizine Contagion. So thank you, Lizine. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Ask that. Great question. Okay. So this is a Bella Mafia question.
Okay.
They want you to rank who you had the most fun with
of
Natasha Kinski, Jennifer Tilly, and Vanessa Redgrave.
Well, I wrote about this in my book. If you want to pick up my book, I Blame Dennis Hopper. I write a lot about Bella Mafia. I was this crazy CBS miniseries that I was in. And although I thought that I would be hanging out, you know, with Vanessa Redgrave, that was like, you know, so fun to be with her. They never had a trailer for me. They would always put me with Jennifer Tilly. And so we became like best buds. And as the quality of the show just was really kind of went out the window, we would just sort of plan things to do within the frame because we knew nobody would notice anyway. So we had our own like movie within a movie thing going on. But it was really funny. She was, you know, so wonderful to hang out with. But as I said, they just, for some reason, I never met Jennifer Tilly in my life. And for some reason, they thought we knew each other. And so I get to set and they go, oh, and, you know, we're just going to be here. We just thought, well, we'll just put you two girls together because you're friends. And I would go to Jennifer's room, you know, I'd kind of knock on the door and she never closed, strewn all over the place. And I don't know if she was expecting me as much as she got me, but we eventually did end up becoming friends. So, you know, that's what's been so great. And we had a lot of laughs and told a lot of great stories. So it was Jennifer number one, Vanessa number two, because she invited me a couple times to drink tequila with her in her trailer, which I am not a big drinker at all. Like, I don't like drinking. I like wine. But when Vanessa Redgrave thinks the scene goes well and says, would you like to come to my trailer and have some tequila? And we're like, I was waiting for you to ask me. Come on. I love tequila. So I did that on numerous occasions. I got some good stories out of her too.
Well, that's great. That question came from Bad Poems with a Z. So thanks for sending that. This is an interesting question that I'm excited about too. So when I was about maybe 12, 13 years old, I went to Disney World and rode a roller coaster called Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith. Yes. And I'm just now remembering that you star in that little pre-intro package as well. Can you talk about like how you got involved with that and what it's like to film a roller coaster, like Disney pre-intro thing?
Oh my God. Okay. This is, it's almost fascinating to me. And a few years ago, I know Disney contacted me to go to the archives, and they actually interviewed me about this. And what is so fascinating, I don't know why they chose me. The only thing that I can think of is that this is when I was doing the Drew Carey show. And I believe that Drew Carey had done a Disney, you know, one of the pre stories before a ride. And my only thought is that because I was on the Drew Carey show, they maybe saw me on the Drew Carey. Somebody at Disney must have seen me. Because that was a kind of a very animated, you know, fun show, because it was when I was on Drew Carey that I was, they called me and asked me to do this thing. And I couldn't believe it, because Aerosmith was the first concert I ever saw when I was a kid. I was obsessed with Aerosmith. My God, they were like my whole childhood. So I was so excited to go do this thing. But as I've said, and I've told, you know, the story many times before, getting through the day. And then the other sort of funny, weird thing is that Ken Marino is in it. He plays. Yeah. Ken Marino is at the keyboard, and we had to work on this special set because the it was like 130 degrees. They had these special lights, and Ken had to wear special glasses that actually told him so he wouldn't go blind, you know, because they had lights underneath. And we had to do this thing. It was like 3 minutes or something, you know, and we had to do it all in one take. You couldn't mess up. And not one of the guys from Aerosmith could ever get through. They'd be talking, and then I would come in, and then they'd say, hey, well, we'll ask our line, and I'd be like, oh my God, manager, I'm the manager. But I found myself actually getting into a managerial role with them. I mean, I couldn't believe, first of all, they're very nice and down to earth. They were all amazing guys, super nice. And years later, when my brother had cancer, they were doing a concert in Connecticut, and they sent me tickets, and I went with my brother to the show, and afterwards they gave him memorabilia, signed memorabilia. I mean, they are really just the nicest guys in the world. But I had an absolute blast hanging out with them. The hardest part was that when we shot it, the ride hadn't been created. And so once the ride was created, we had to go down and ride. I had to go down and ride the ride. And that was, I got very, very ill. I am not a good roller coaster person. Roller coasters in the night, even worse.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that ride is, it's intense. It's not for the faint of heart. So super interesting. Okay. Melvin, your grandfather, did he ever share any thoughts or recollections about working with Joan Crawford or about her as a person?
Yes. He did like three films with Joan Crawford, and I believe that, you know, they actually got along pretty well. I mean, I think that the only thing that he said he made there was a joke. I forgot which film they were doing, but Diane Baker told me this story. Diane Baker's an actress, very close friends with my grandfather, but that Joan Crawford started somewhere in her career kind of putting on airs and acting like a movie star and coming late to set. And he said that one day, I guess she came late. She came a couple hours late to set. They were all waiting for her and she had an entire entourage with her. And so my grandfather, to kind of make fun of her, poke fun at her, the next day got a bunch of people, crew guys and everything to dress up and pretend they were his entourage. And everybody started laughing and the point was put across, and then she never came to set late again.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
There you go. I love that. And just so I can credit, Steve Cummings Jones asked about Rock and Roller Coaster, which is great. And the Joan Crawford question comes from Chris Magenta. So thank you to both of you for being fans of the show. I might know the answer to this one, but I'm curious, what is the most bizarre film you've ever been in? And what is personally your favorite kind of bizarre cult film?
Well, yes, the most bizarre film is the one that I was in. I'm blanking it, that we made fun of the trailer that I've never
snake something. No, there's snakes in it. Flypaper,
which again, I'm lost at why it's called Flypaper. This is the movie I was in that I have never seen. I'm too scared to see it. But it did mark this very strange encounter with the actress Carol Lynley, who was sadly an extra in the film, and I had like a little thing with her. Nobody knew who she was, but I did, and I got to talk to her and spend time with her. And this is a movie, I've told this story before. Subsequently, I was in a film with Lucy Liu, and I said we were actually in a movie together, Flypaper, and she looked me straight in the eye and said, no, we weren't. And I said, no, we actually were. I didn't get it at first, like sometimes I didn't. I said, no, we were in the movie. I probably got that wrong. So that would be this very, very bizarre movie called Flypaper. I believe it was a German director. I really don't know much about it. I did have fun working with Dane Cook.
He's in Flypaper.
Dane has a very tiny role. He plays a private investigator. I don't know. The whole thing is kind of nonsensical, but that was the weirdest movie. There's a scene with Lucy Liu and she's making love with snakes. That's all I can tell you.
It's a Tuesday morning for me. and then you just said, or the other part of the question was a very bizarre film or a cult film that you particularly love.
Wow. Well, if you're going into, like good, bad, like that kind of thing, mm-hmm. I would say probably this, I love this movie called The Oscar with Stephen Boyd, which is really like good, bad. I'm trying to think, the Naked Kiss is a very kind of weird detour. I mean, I'm thinking more along that lines. I don't know if they mean horror films.
Well, I'm wondering, I have to ask, because Ryan and I are both obsessed with a movie that James Franco recently made fun of in The Disaster Artist. Have you seen the original movie, The Room, with Tommy Wiseau?
No, I've never seen it. And it, I thought that The Disaster Disaster Artist was quite good. So obviously you didn't have to see the movie. I mean, I remember seeing the billboards and all mm-hmm. of that. But I don't know if I'd have to see the movie. I was trying to think of like other horror movies that are obscure.
Like early Lynch. I don't know if you've seen like Eraserhead or any of his early stuff. How you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. Isn't that funny? I'm not a fan of Eraserhead. I've tried to watch it. just a little bit too weird for me personally. I love the Elephant Man. Although it's so hard to watch, right? Because it's so sad, but that's an incredible movie. But I get so, I'll have nightmares if I, with some of these, you know, kind of these cult films.
It's interesting with Lynch because I also love The Elephant Man, and some of his esoteric stuff is a little tough for me. Like, I don't love Mulholland like other people. I don't love Inland Empire like other people, but I think Elephant Man is kind of a masterpiece. And it makes me want to see him direct something a little more conventional because he's a great director.
I totally agree. I feel the same way. I know others maybe wouldn't agree, but it would be nice to take some of the strangeness and then formalize it in a way. And that's such an interesting film because, you know, he had a partnership with Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks was the one who had kind of discovered him and made him the director, and he was really working within a studio environment. So I don't know, you know, he is very much an artist and has put out art books too. So if he wants to be out there, I guess he can.
Frank Wells just popped in our chat, which is kind of fun. First of all, he tongue in cheek joked that, I see you guys are late. You can't blame it on traffic this time, which is fair. Thank you, Frank. And then he said, Ileana, can you recall the first time you saw your grandfather in a movie or on TV? And same question for yourself, seeing yourself on the big screen.
I think the very first time I saw my grandfather on TV was in this movie, and they never show it. It was in rotation quite a bit when I was a kid. It's a Glenn Ford movie called Advance to the Rear. And man, I thought that was like the funniest thing. I think it's a precursor actually to F Troop. Mm. They're all, you know, it's like a Civil War comedy with Stella Stevens, Glenn Ford, and my grandfather. And at one point, my grandfather's like somehow is, you know, I don't know, sliding, you know, they do something silly with a film, reverse it, and he's sliding down a hill backwards. And
interesting.
When I was five, I thought that was about the funniest thing I could think of. So I probably saw that, and then probably Ninotchka. Probably saw Ninotchka on TV. But then as I got older, I was trying to think of the movie theater, the first ones that I saw with him. If Being There was before The Tenant. May even be like Being There or something like that on the, you know, because everything else I was a little bit too young to see. I remember seeing The Tenant in the movie theater and just like almost laughing because it was it was a horror movie, but because I knew my grandfather was in, I was almost laughing like at everything he was doing.
I'm sure. And then related, the first time you saw yourself, what was that experience like?
Oh God, I'm one of these strange people. People say they hate looking at themselves on screen. I'm fascinated with looking myself on screen. I'll see certain things I don't like, you know, I say, oh geez, I wish I hadn't done that, or that looks strange. But I'm kind of fascinated by, maybe that's the director part of me.
Yeah.
I'm studying something that I'm doing. I don't look so much, you know, with the flaws or this or that. I'll see something maybe to work on. Say, oh, I wish you'd done that. But that would have been I did this tiny little part in this movie called Hello Again, because when I worked for this film publicist, we shared offices with Frank Perry, the director, the wonderful director, Frank Perry. And they had forgot to cast a role. And he came over to my desk and said, you're an actress, right? And I said, yes, Frank, I'm an actress who answers the phones. And he said, no, I may have a part for you. And he said, can you come in my office and do a monologue? And what's crazy is that I had a monologue. So I always have a monologue just in case. So I went in he was old school, you know, I went in his office and I did a monologue and he said, do you have anything else? And I think I pulled out something out of my hat that I had. He said, fine. And he put me in the car and we went down and I yelled at Shelley Long. And that was my first time on screen. And I remember seeing myself on screen and going, oh my God, my posture is terrible. Because I I had a baby carriage in the scene. I only had like one line. I just had to yell at Shelley Long. But I had this baby carriage, and I remember I was bent way over, and I was horrified that I had bad posture like that. But I didn't know anything about making movies, I learned. But that was like the very first time. And then by New York Stories, that was very simple. I sort of knew more what I was doing by that point.
Well, I love the poetry of the fact that you're first seen on cameras with Shelley Long because you do a excellent Shelley Long impression.
No, you're thinking of Shelley Winters.
Oh, am I? You're right.
Yes, Shelley Long. Yeah, I can't. I don't know if there is a Shelley Long.
You're right. I totally just, Shelley Long's Diane and Shelley Winters is The Shining. Is that right?
No, that's, oh my God. That's
Shelley Duvall. I'm mixing all my Shelleys.
Shelley Winters is from Lolita.
Oh, Shelley, thank you.
She's always everything. It's like a cackle. She talks like this.
It's amazing how many like late 80s Shelleys there are. I guess it was a popular name. Yeah. Tammy Gorman at Tall and Insecure says, out of all the films you've shot, is there a certain scene, shot, or line that stands out to you as a favorite?
Well, definitely To Die For was a highlight just because, I went and I write about this in my book too, this idea that there were two movies. There was one movie that was like a home movie that we shot where Gus Van Sant, the director, was asking me questions. And then there's the formal part of the movie. And sadly, one of my favorite scenes that I ever shot in my entire life is the confrontation scene between me and Nicole Kidman that does not exist in the movie because it ended up getting cut.
Wow.
And the movie went through, they were putting it together and it went through some disastrous sort of pre-screenings. And Columbia at the time was going to scrap the film. I mean, it was literally like that's what was going on. And then all of a sudden the Cannes Film Festival, it wanted the movie to be in Cannes. And if not for that, they would have scrapped the movie. So they went back to the cutting room and they were scrambling trying to get a cut ready for Cannes. And subsequently, an entire reel of the movie To Die For was scrapped. And
wow.
It's incredible. Yeah, there's a whole scene with Joaquin Phoenix and Nicole Kidman going to this carnival. It's an incredible reel. And there is a confrontation scene with me and Nicole Kidman where I walk in and I catch her and she's throwing away my brother's clothes. I mean, when you want to see Matt Dillon, the great Matt Dillon. And that was one of the most fun scenes, and I was looking forward to it, and I got to know Nicole a little bit, and it just was, I was really into it, and before the scene, I said horrible things to her, you know, to get her revved up and everything. It was real actory, and unfortunately, it's not... It's somewhere in a vault. I wish they would do a Criterion of that movie and put it back together.
I love that.
Yep.
Well, Lily Sophia is asking, are there any actors that you haven't worked with that you're dying to work with?
Oh my God, there's so many, you know.
It's funny because I feel like you've worked with everyone, but.
No, you know who I've missed out on is Jack Nicholson.
Mm.
I've watched him work. I remember when I was in acting school, they were doing Pritzi's Honor. And I remember sort of sneaking on the set and watching him act. I was very exciting. So Jack Nicholson, Gene Hackman, of course, unbelievable. Michael Caine. I mean, there's so many. As far as women go, let me see. Who do I love? It's always like, again, Nicole Kidman, I'd love to work with her again. I had a total blast working with Jennifer Aniston.
Mm.
I thought we did the movie called Picture Perfect. And I thought we had really kind of fun chemistry, you know, working in that film. So those are a couple of people off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm missing tons of people, but they're some of my favorites. And then directors too. I love Alexander Payne. That would just be, I died. And
gosh, you'd be so good in a Payne movie. I don't know if you know this, but he's my favorite director. It's funny. I look at Sideways was one of the movies that kind of got me into like cinema. I think that movie's a masterpiece, but even like Nebraska, I think that movie's wonderful. And when I think of like your on-camera presence, I think you'd be great in an Alexander Payne movie, actually.
Well, since I was actually offered a part in the movie Election. Mm-hmm. It was a very small part. I think of playing Matthew Broderick's wife. It's been many years since that. And I, of all the things, I had a conflict. I don't remember what I was doing, but I couldn't do it. And I've never had a chance. I auditioned for a pilot, a TV pilot that he was directing. And it got down between me and another girl. The other girl got it. And I was disappointed about that. But he's amazing. I'd love to work with him.
Well, I'm not just kissing up here, but I feel like you do a great job of playing like a little bit of sardonic, like I don't know. I just feel like tonally you guys would be such a great match. So we've got to make that happen.
Yeah, I would love that. Believe me, I would love that. And I love too. I forgot. I said under my breath, of course, I idolize Albert Brooks, and I've got to meet him a couple times and talk to him. And I feel like anything I've ever done in comedy, I owe a lot to him, because his everything he did early on really influenced me.
You mentioned Gus Van Sant quickly, and I forgot you two worked together. He seems like he'd be such a dark, I mean, like his movies, what's he like, is I guess the short question I'm trying to ask.
He is, you know, great to work with. I think that the only thing, he's very quiet. Like when I first met him, he's very shy. And it took, and I'm very kind of loud and boisterous and, you know, like to ask people a lot of questions and everything. But I'm very respectful. The minute I meet someone, I go, okay, they're a quiet person, you know, cool, kind of cool it. But so Gus is very much that way. He's quiet. He observes quite a bit and then comes up with his kind of yay or nay. Like some people are very communicative and he's quieter in a way. So it was just understanding his rhythm of that. And I keep plugging my book, but as I said, I write a lot about him in my book. I was such a fan of My Own Private Idaho and the other Drugstore Cowboy. Oh my God. I was blown away. When I saw Drugstore Cowboy early on, that movie for me, I just was blown away. That I just thought, I want to be in a movie like this. I just thought it was incredible. And just to get a chance to work with him in a film was really, have his indie vibe, you know, was great.
I love it. Well, we only have time for one more, so I'm going to gas you up.
Okay.
Here we go. Scott McEwen at Scotty Boy says, how do you stay so beautiful? What's your regimen? I'm serious.
Well, Scott, it's my tea. No, I think the only thing is that my only regimen, aside from that I do, I don't smoke or anything, is I do dance class 4 days a week. Now, unfortunately, because of this, I'm doing a lot of these online dance classes, which I find very challenging to do in your living room, but I'm doing it. And I would say that that is probably my number one thing mentally and physically, is to try to dance and exercise and ride my bike. That's about all I can think of. To say, but thank you for the compliment.
I love it. We unfortunately are out of time, but I think this is something we should do once every, you know, 2-3 months. It's really fun to hear from your fans and do, and we can even take some call-ins and this has been so much fun.
I want to hear if people read some of the books that I've recommended. Great film I saw this week, a film noir that was recommended to me by Alan K. Rohde. He's on Twitter. Trapped, one of the first big starring roles of Lloyd Bridges. And that was a really interesting, film. I liked it quite a bit, Trapped.
Love it. Okay. Well, I think we'll be here next week. And if we can, Ileana, we should put our brains together and see if we can get a guest in. Do as little sure, Zoom.
I think everybody's, it's so funny, like we're not self-conscious, but some people are a little self-conscious about being on camera or maybe showing their house or something. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. We may or may not be having a show next week, but we'll keep you guys posted. And in the meantime, make sure y'all are taking care of yourselves. And any other thoughts, Ileana, anything before we go?
No, just I appreciate all the questions and, you know, this too shall pass. And it's a reflective time. My thoughts and prayers obviously go out to anyone in New York City. It's really sad what is going on there. And it's just an incredible city. So hopefully we will see the other side of this very, very soon.
I think so. Well, a little bit of good news. A lot of people are saying that we're actually doing a great job social distancing overall. And the projected numbers that were assumed are higher than what will probably actually happen because people are following protocol. So that's good.
Yeah. So that's good. So everybody stay inside and, you know, don't fight with each other. I'm going to put my scarf on now and be like a bon vivant and say goodbye.
All right. Just let us know. Everyone's life is like a movie, right?
Everyone's life is like a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. This is the end of our movie for today. I'll see you soon, Jeff.
See you soon, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.